packed my bags last night, free flight, 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out at sea on such a timeless flight.
Wisdom and history and clarity to the form of politics. in his spare time. I hear the play he produced is doing well overseas. Yep, he took it to Ireland. It's being shown at the biggest Irish festival. And you can join us for some unbiased conversation about the political world and how Donald Trump affects the economy. And let's have some fun and let's vote and change the world. If you'd like to come in and get your voice heard, talk to Mike, talk politics, talk shop, whatever's on your mind. The number is 319-527-6099. And now, without further ado, the number one radio personality, Brian the Hammer Jackson.
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
Thank you.
Is that you?
Yes, it is me. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. We have some great show today. We're going to talk really. Yes.
You were serenading me, so I serenaded you with Elton John.
I did serenade you this morning when you woke me up.
Yes,
yeah.
You did.
That song is going to iTunes. That was original.
That was an original hammer hit.
Hello, beautiful, my old friend. It's time for us to talk again. Yeah, I did serenade you in the morning.
Yes, you did.
Good morning, everybody. We are worldwide. We're on Stitcher, we're on Itcher, and we're on TuneIn. We're also on
Stitcher?
I don't know. They don't have it. They don't know. We're on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Snap. We're on Blog Talk. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter.
Snapchat.
That's what I said. Snap. Didn't I say Snap?
You said Snap. Snap. No, you said Snap.
Well, they call it Snap. What the kids say. They call it Snap. Get with the time. They don't call it Snapchat. Do some snapping.
No, they call it
Snapchat.
Snap. But when you take pictures and you send messages, they call it snapping.
That's right. So we're everywhere, my friends, and that's why we have a large audience, and we want to welcome more and more people to the show. We see you coming in the studio. We understand you don't want to talk. We understand you're at work. We understand that you're at home. We understand your kids are around. We freaking understand. Shit. But we want to thank you. We want to thank you for listening, and we know it's difficult because Ellen is inappropriate. So put on your headphones.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
I'm inappropriate.
Put on your headphones and turn it up.
You should tell people to take a look on your page about what you posted last night.
Oh, the sex dolls? Wow.
Yeah. That even freaked Cindy out.
Yeah, how I got busted? You're right there in real time. Honey.
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I know. We were on Twitter for about 10, 15 minutes. Everything was fine. And I go, hey, Ellen, check this out. And then all of a sudden, honey, where did you come from? I was just passing through. It's like, what are you doing? Nothing. And you were right there. You were being cool, though, because you were not laughing. Were you laughing deep inside? Because I heard nothing but dead air. Like, you ran away. It was just...
I was listening, and I was laughing inside, but I was also, I was still in shock, because when I saw, I go, whoa, what the hell? When you showed it to me, I go, what the hell is that?
Yeah. I go, they're not so sex dolls, baby.
I mean, yeah, they look so lifelike, you know. That's why I went whoa,
I know
because that one pose that the doll was doing.
Yeah, I know, but I couldn't. But you know, my first thought was the smell. You know what I mean? They have to be made. You know, I'm not joking. I don't think I could get past the rubbers like screwing a tire.
I know. You know,
they
will
make it life.
You know what? I don't like. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. I don't like touching balloons. I don't like blowing up balloons because that latex smell stays on your hands forever. I don't like touching, the gloves that the doctors wear when they're examining you. I don't like that either because that smell stays with you and it stays on your body. I cannot
yeah,
stand
I,
that.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, you know, because I wonder what they're made out of and how do you
they're
wash
made
your
out of
doll?
Latex. They're made out
so
of latex.
So you couldn't put it in your washing machine and, you know, and shit. How do you clean
no,
your
actually
doll?
You can't. Well, you know what? Actually, you can wash it down because latex, or you can use, you know, mild soap. Or not mild soap, but maybe a damp cloth to wash it down, I guess. I don't know.
Well, maybe we'll make a live call to find out about our sex doll. Because then if you wash it a lot, then the doll becomes old. So you get a doll that's 23 and you use it a lot and you're washing it, and it probably looks like 80 next week. Like, damn! Because when you wash it, it gets all wrinkled and cracked in it and everything. It's like, wow. We'll talk about
got
that.
Got a little problem
all
there,
right,
don't
everybody.
You,
exactly. Wow. They do look real, though. All right, everybody. We're waiting for Mike Romo to come in. Today is politics. I promoted this all over the place, on Twitter, everywhere, so we're going to probably have a lot of people coming in the studio. We got to act serious because some people are new. We don't want to scare them off so much, so let's start it without further ado.
Ado.
Yeah. I can't get it out of my head, Ellen. Hello, darkness,
what?
My
oh God. Seriously?
I can't.
Look,
we have
that song. If you're going to play that song, we have it in the studio. It sounds good in
all
the
right.
studio.
I'm going to have to play to get it out of my head. All right, here we go. In the beginning, we're talking politics. This is Morning Joe in the Morning, and here's Al Sharpton. Let's get it on.
And I'm sympathizing to this thing that he's playing to like he did in The Apprentice. He once called me and begging you to go on The Apprentice. And I'm saying to you, we're looking at a man trying to make a statesman out of a showman, and he doesn't know the difference. That's why he's causing these trade wars, which leads to a recession. That's why he's threatening Fox that you may not get one of the big debates when the Democrat has chosen to run against me, because you dare to have a bad poll against me. I mean, this is not someone serious. He's a showman in the dressing room trying to figure out how do I go out on that stage. I'm too fat now, the act is too old now, and I don't know if they love me anymore. So he's looking for a new act. Unfortunately, he has serious ramifications for the rest of us.
Well, and just like
wow,
trying to ramp up the economy, he's also trying to shock people who were previously thinking they could no longer be shocked by his act. That's why he resorted to, many would say, fascist example of send them home. I mean, his crowd's chanting, send them back. And, of course, Donald Trump. Condemned it the next day, and then of course after that, back down, just like he backs down all the time, and said they were good people, and you know they could do whatever they wanted to do, and he wasn't going to criticize them. But you know, Sam, let's turn to the Democrats for a moment, and what does your reporting tell you, and what can you pass along to us about the give and take on impeachment between Nancy Pelosi and let's say Chairman Jerry Nadler? Where does Nancy Pelosi sit today? What's likely as it pertains to starting at least an inquiry into impeachment in the House?
Well, things are a little bit up in the air because everyone's out on recess right now. But where we were right before then was that the party essentially was trying to have it two ways. They're not in an impeachment proceeding, but they claim that they are in an impeachment proceeding. Jerry Nadler's out there, along with a number of other members, saying we're now investigating Donald Trump for the possibility of impeaching him. I don't think that they're going to be able to thread this needle rhetorically. Most people can see through it that this is just an attempt to pacify.
Here's Fox News, everybody.
Where Nancy Pelosi seems most comfortable in, which is, you know, she's still, according to all my reporting at least.
Here's Fox News, everybody. Hold on.
For a variety of reasons. One is, despite the fact that there's now a majority of House Democrats as
the president, in fact, we know that Mooch was totally incapable of handling his White House job. And then, with
Fox News, everybody.
Are they picking on your buddy the moot?
Yep. On this program, among others, late last month. These are racist comments. Period, full stop. The fact that we even have to debate it means that the president is in trouble on it. As Scaramucci escalated his criticism, the president hit back, tweeting that the mooch was totally incapable of handling his White House job, and then with reporters. From Long Island is Anthony Scaramucci, who, of course, served briefly as White House Communications Director. And you've largely been defending the president for years. How did you go in a few days from saying Trump needs to tone down his rhetoric to calling him a jackass, crazy, off the rails, narcissistic, and saying the Republicans should dump him in 2020?
Well, I mean, those are probably words that his entire staff is saying about him, but they're just, unfortunately, not willing to come out in public and say them. And the last thing you saw there with the press spray, you could add that to the Washington Post 10,000 lies, and if any journalist just wants to do this, just go look at the White House phone records. You'll see that I didn't call him that many times, and I'll also point out, I haven't given any money to his campaign or asked him for my job back, so he can continue to live in that world of the delusional activity. But what I'm trying to understand, like, why you flipped, because you didn't have time.
So I will be, you are now basically kind of campaigning against him.
Because he's gone off the rails, Howie, because he's acting in a way that's completely unstable. It is an issue of leadership and the culture of servant leadership. He is literally, we've gone 42 presidents since George Washington. He's literally the opposite of George Washington. When he looks at a news feed or a news search, he's focusing on the name Trump and not the name of the United States of America. And so the guy has completely lost it. Moreover, as it relates to the culture of leadership inside the White House, the cabinet, the people that he's leading, he doesn't lead them. He thinks that his personal charm is going to fix the China situation or the North Korea situation, when in fact it's the very opposite. And so now we're in this perilous situation where he's blending racism into the leadership culture. And
but
so
here,
for me, I'm a very –
Let me just finish one more second.
Okay. No, I'm just saying I'm a very loyal guy. Hogan pointed out that I was fired. No problem. I stayed loyal to him for 2 years. I broke gradually on several specific things. They're taking babies, four-month-old babies, away from breastfeeding moms in ICE attacks. I mean,
all
come
right.
on, guys. This is not the United States we grew up in.
Let me jump in, because some of your critics, especially on the left, are saying this. The president has used divisive language from the beginning, they believe, and they're saying you largely defended him. Yes, you were tough on certain issues, including on this program, including some of his harsher rhetoric against the press, but you largely defended him. You wrote a book largely praising him, and now they're saying, what took you so long?
I think it's a very justifiable criticism, and I'll have an editorial in the Washington Post this week that fully elucidates that. Frankly, I don't have enough time on your show to fully elucidate it, but here's what I would say to those people on the left. We recognize that the president is a clear and present danger to the American society, the American culture. There are many people inside the White House and in the cabinet. I would ask the left to let's create an off-ramp for those people, because when you're trying to deprogram people from a cult, one of the first things you have to do is allow them to change their mind. You have to allow them to have the space to change their mind. So me, it was a very gradual process, and they can be very critical of me for that. I have frankly owned that. But trust me, there's a ton of people inside that White House, inside the government, up on Capitol Hill that feel the exact same way. And I would just caution those people on Capitol Hill, when their poll numbers start to go in the direction of the president, I know they're intimidated by his bullying now, and I know they're intimidated by the force of his personality and his nonsense, but don't be.
I know what happens.
Once you beat up on a bully a little bit, they start to crack.
I know that you're saying you speak for some Republicans who aren't willing to say these things publicly, but look, you have been a very popular guy this week. You've been all over MSNBC and CNN. You sat down with Don Lemon, one of the premier Trump bashers on cable news. You were on MSNBC with Omarosa. Sean Spicer says your defection is, I'm quoting here, catnip for the left-wing media to go out and use somebody like you to create a controversy. Does he have a point?
Well, he has a point, and I think it's a very good talking point. But, you know, listen, people can see through the camera in their living rooms. That's not really my personality. I got brutally fired by the guy. If I was going to break from the guy, why would I have just broken right then and there? I tried to stay loyal to his agenda and his mission, and I'm also balanced today. I'm also pointing out there's a lot of things that he's done as it related to the economy that has been very helpful. The racial stuff has been very hurtful. And what I would say to Sean Spicer and others, ripping the social fabric of the country is a cancer. It's a metastatic cancer. Having a recession here or there, that's a bone break. We can survive.
And now a little word on the recession. The economy.
In top aides, Jonathan Lemire, you have new reporting that suggests there are concerns within the administration over a possible recession and what it could mean for next year's election. Reading from your piece, quote, Trump advisors fear a weakened economy could hurt him with moderate Republican and independent voters who have been willing to give him a pass on some of his incendiary policies and rhetoric. And White House economic advisors see few options for reversing course should the economy start to slip. Jonathan adds, though Trump has expressed private worries about Wall Street, he is also skeptical about some of the weaker economic indicators, wondering if the media and establishment figures are manipulating the data to make him look bad. Trump's skepticism has been reinforced by White House officials who have long been inclined to only show him rosier economic assessments. The New York Times reiterates that View writing, Trump has repeated the claims in private discussions with aides and allies, insisting that his critics are trying to take away what he sees as his calling card for re-election. Trump has been agitated in discussions about the economy and by the news media's reporting of warnings of a possible recession. The Times adds, Trump has said forces that do not want him to win have been overstating the damage his trade war has caused, and several aides agree with him that the news media is overplaying the economic fears, adding to his feeling of just of being justified. Joe, the question I have for you is the challenge for the media has been sometimes how to characterize the things that have come out of the president's mouth and the things that he's done and said in a way that is as objective as possible, as right down the middle as possible, because some of them are so incendiary. Some of the things he says are basically racist, and it's been difficult to just report on it because when you say what the president says, it sounds horrible. It's not us. It's him. He's got a very extreme way of communicating his hatred.
Well, when if you look at just the numbers, if you look at
the numbers,
okay,
the numbers.
If you look at what, and I talked about Jonathan Lemire, what Paul Singer wrote last week, a concern of an extraordinarily damaging reversal on the economy. This is not just people in the media. There are a lot of people who are very concerned, and obviously the media's responsibility is not to be caught sleeping. I think a lot of us were caught sleeping in 2007, 2008, when we didn't understand what was going on in the big banks. We didn't understand the credit default swaps. We didn't understand the crisis that was coming. So certainly when people like Paul Singer are warning of a coming economic crisis, there is a responsibility for everybody to be a bit more alert. I personally don't know economics that well. I was reading Sports Illustrated in the back of my University of Alabama Econ 101 class. I don't see it coming because consumer confidence is so high and because the United States economy is so much stronger than the rest of the world's. My biggest concern is what the trade war is doing to the economies of those we trade with the most. It seems to me that may be the biggest challenge to short-term and long-term challenge to our economy.
Yeah, and Joe, let me first say that Mika was on the adventure last week, but we were far more confident of her.
And there you go. It's all about the economy, stupid, and we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to have our special guest, Mike Bromo. Mike had dealings with the White House before. Mike was with and working with the Reagan administration. Mike has a lot of information that inside the White House and outside the White House. Mike is not a liberal, as you believe. Mike is very unbiased in his opinion, but he is a patriot. And I strongly believe that there's a revolution inside the Republican Party. I really believe that Mike, again, working with the Reagan administration, I believe he's a Republican, and we have a lot of Republicans that come into this studio. And if you, the pieces you just heard, these are commentators on MSNBC and CNN, and a majority of them are Republicans. They're tired. They want the party back. They don't want to be associated with this rhetoric of hate and racism and nonsense. I understand Reagan had to trickle down economics, which did not work. Mike was probably privy to that. And we seem to take that, and the Republicans seem to run with that all the way up to 2016 with a different form, with Trump's form, about the tariffs. Without further ado, let's talk to Mike. He's in the studio now, and if you'd like to come into the studio, Ellen, what's the number?
The number, if you'd like to join us, is 319-527-6099.
And we are the number one show in the morning. That's Brian Hammer Jackson and Ellen J. in the morning. Our special guest is here, Mike Bromo. Welcome to the show, Mike. And it's all about the economy, stupid.
Good morning.
Good morning, my friend. And, Mike, how do you feel about this? How is this? Do you really believe that if the economy slips, we go into a recession, that it possibly could end his presidential career or election, re-election?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, if you look at historical trends and the economy, when there was the bond inversion 10 days ago, whenever it occurred, in modern times, you know, the last 70 years, every time there's been that bond inversion, it's followed up with a recession. So that's a fairly good indicator of a recession. And there are other signs out there that, you know, eventually there's going to be a recession. It's just economics, you know, the economy is a cyclical beast. And we've been going through a long period of recovery since early in the Obama administration. The recovery is nothing new with Donald Trump. Donald Trump likes to take credit for it. He's contributed to the recovery, sustaining it through massive government deficit spending. And I want to circle back to that in a moment. So, you know, if for no other reason than, you know, the economy's been on a growth curve, has been healthy, has been even booming at times for 10 years, something like that, you know, it's getting to the point where it's the recovery it has aged, and that's another sign that a recession is probably looming. So you couple that with the bond market, and then just the age, how long the recovery's been ongoing. The stage is ripe. The stage is set for a recession or an economic downturn that might not actually end up being a technical recession. If there's Trump already, despite what he says, yesterday he did a tweet that he has a 51% approval rating. No poll in the country, including Fox News and Rasmussen, which are the two polls that nearly always are more favorable to Trump, none of them have that total. His approval rating right now is 43%. Another historical point is no president in 100 years, since we've had polling, since Gallup has been doing polling, no president with an approval rating under 48% has been reelected. Donald Trump is well under 48%, still a long way to the election. So there are multiple things at play right now when it comes to Donald Trump's election campaign. And if an economic downturn is added to the mix, he has no chance of being reelected. The only thing he's able to hang his hat on right now is what he's calling a good economy. And in some ways, the economy is good, but for working Americans, they didn't get the tax cut they were promised by Donald Trump. He promised that with his tax plan, the average American worker would get $4,000 back a year. Not happening. In fact, most people are paying more in taxes. Working Americans, middle-class Americans, whatever term you want to apply to them, paid $90 billion more in taxes last year under the Trump plan than they were paying prior to the Trump, quote, tax cut. So the economy, you know, there's an element of the economy doing well, but when you start breaking apart the elements of the economy, things aren't wonderful for the average American. You know, many people are, you know, yes, they're employed, but they're employed at two jobs. They, one job isn't bringing them enough money to sustain their home, their family, et cetera. So it's very tenuous already for Trump when it comes to the economy. He's never gotten the boost from a good economy that other presidents have gotten. I mean, if this were George Bush or Barack Obama in office, with the economy we've experienced in the last 3 years, their approval ratings would be close to 60%, not 43%. So, yes, the economy is important. Yes, it's an election is always about the economy, meaning a voter's pocketbook. But this, and that's true this election. But there are other things that play in this election as well, that the economy, if it dips, is truly the final nail in Donald Trump's coffin.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of things that the Democrats have said, I gotcha. We can get a list of things. This will do Trump in. You know, it starts with all the girls who claim Donald Trump just to harass them. We can go all the way back to the tape with grab him by the pussy, and then we can go. A woman claimed she was raped in a store, and little girls are coming out with the Epstein thing. None of this has really hurt the Don. I'm talking when I say
yes,
Don,
it has.
Referring
yes,
to Donald
it has.
Trump. The base seem as strong as they can, because I'm looking on his page right now, and he should not be. Some people assume that as a president, as an incoming president, you should be at 50%, 55%, 60% maybe. His base is still staying by him at 42%. And now when you take a stab at the economy and we're saying this is it, this is it, this is it, do you really believe now? I think this will work because this is in Trump. It's finally getting to Trump in his head. But is it really gonna play well in Peoria? That Trump's, you know, because what about the? I don't hear any outrage from the farmers, and I don't hear any outrage.
Yeah, there are. Oh, yeah, there are. Oh, farmers are very outraged with Donald Trump. They've taken a huge hit because of the tariffs. Mm-hmm. The entire one of the large segments of the agricultural industry in the United States are soybean farmers. Our largest market for soybean sales was China. That market is gone forever. Trump destroyed their market. For soybean farmers have been decimated because of Donald Trump. Farmers are not happy with Donald Trump. And when it comes to the Trump core, that block of 30 to 40% of voters,
we begin with the new report.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They're gonna vote for him no matter what. He can lie, he can cheat. They're no better off economically, financially than they were before Trump. Some of them are probably, and farmers are worse off. But again, farmers overall, a majority of farmers do not support Donald Trump anymore. And all of this stuff has hurt Donald Trump, because a president with this economy, like I just made mention of, would have an approval rating approaching at least 60%. Donald Trump has a 43% approval rating because of these other things. And his base has not grown. One thing that happens, George Bush in the aftermath, George W. Bush, in the aftermath of 9/11 had a 91% approval rating. 91%. And, you know, the Americans weren't really excited about him being elected. I mean, he won, and he probably won because of a Supreme Court decision. But Americans want to get behind their president. They want to like their president. And George W. Bush proves the point after 9/11. When there was a real catastrophe in this country, you know, George W. Bush, I think, did a lot of things wrong as president, made a lot of mistakes. He had a lot of policies I didn't agree with. I think a lot of Americans didn't agree with. But he had a 91% approval rating. Now, there was nothing that would have motivated the current president, whoever he would be, to that level, because fortunately we haven't had a 9/11 catastrophe. But there's no reason that Donald Trump during the past – there is a reason, and I'll get to that – that Donald Trump shouldn't have a 60% approval rating right now. And the reason he doesn't is because of all of the stuff he's done, it, all of the stuff he's been accused of doing – that matters to the majority of Americans. Because it does
but
matter.
But does it? Now, Mike,
it
you
does
know
matter.
What I'm afraid.
The polls prove that.
Okay.
The
no,
polls,
I agree with you. But
yeah.
This is really we have made him such an albatross around the Republican Party's neck. And you hear the left, and you can almost hear them trying to start the revolution, saying, come on, where's the response when he says something outrageous? Where is the Republican response? You know, they're afraid of him, blah, 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 blah. And
well,
it's true, if you really look. Yeah.
The Republican response, oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. The Republican response is the Republican Party is roughly 20% smaller today than it was when Donald Trump started running for president. That's the response. Yeah, Donald Trump has, you know, the support of 92% of the Republican Party. But that's a Republican Party that is much smaller. And the Republican Party lost people when George Bush was president, too. There was a flight from the party when Bush was president. And the Republican Party today is much smaller than it was in the 80s. In the 80s, it was increasing in members. Today, it's decreasing in members. And it's now the electorate's divided pretty much, you know, maybe 24% Democrat. And, you know, it varies by state, but if you kind of average it out, that's maybe 24% Democrat, 30% independent voters. Unaffiliated voters are probably the largest block now. And then the Republicans, you know, maybe a little bit smaller than the Democratic Party. But, again, this the Republicans that are left in the Republican Party are overall are – voters and elected officials that are extremely conservative, you know, evangelical Christians, fundamentalist Christians, but people who like, you know, fiscal conservatives, a lot of them have left the Republican Party because Donald Trump and the Republican Party in the last 2 years have accelerated deficit spending worse than it's ever been. And that's what I wanted to circle back to, too. If we're heading into a recession or an economic downturn, one of the tools to remedy a recession is increased governmental spending. But right now, the debt in government, the level of debt is so high right now, there's almost no wiggle room left for the government to take on more debt without causing, you know, the deficit causes long-term economic consequences for our government and our country. Someday, someone's going to have to pay that bill. But there's not enough wiggle room anymore in as far as deficit spending is concerned. I mean, when we're deficit spending like $1 trillion a year, which is, I don't know, one third of the entire budget is debt or is taking on new debt to satisfy the budget. There isn't much room to take on much else. So we don't have that economic stimulus there. So there's concerns amongst economists as to how we're going to remedy the next economic downturn or recession. Because there's not a lot of wiggle room left to deficit spend.
Okay. Well, this is when I think you're right, but you know, Mike, explain what a recession is. I mean, when people talk about recession,
I was
just about
to ask that question.
Is.
Last time we had one, no, I was my teen. I was young. I really
did.
Yeah, I really didn't understand what it meant to have a recession. What is that?
It's, you know, in the simplest of terms, it's like right now, different segments of the economy are growing. Well, have been growing. There seems to be some slowdowns and confusion as to what's happening. But with a recession, things like the production of products, television sets, all of that starts to decrease. Companies start producing less of their products. Consumers start buying less. And as there's less production and less consumption, there's less money going into the economy itself. There's less money to pay workers. There's less money for taxes. So the economy, rather than you see the gross national, the GDP increase 3% this quarter, you'll start seeing the GDP going from 3%, 2%, 1%, and then it can slide into negative numbers. Like we're losing ground. I hope that kind of explains it. It's a period of less money spending, less consumption, less production. Everything is less, and that results in less money going in for taxes, paychecks, everything. There's just less money, and then it can lead to inflation as well, which makes everything cost more. So that's kind of it. And recessions, you know, they can, here's kind of and I don't mean to sound cute or clever, but it's kind of like having a low-grade fever. I mean, you know, life goes on. The economy, you know, we go on as Americans. It's not like a depression where everything goes to hell in a handbasket. But with it, it's like you have this, you just kind of feel sick for 18 months or whatever. Doesn't last forever. They eventually end with tweaking, you know, by the government making some shifts in how it spends money, tax cuts. There are different things the government can do, but and the private sector can do too. It's just,
well,
this
is last year, Mike. This is the 18th, precisely September 7th, and this is back Fox News comparing Obama economy versus Trump economy. And mind you, again, this is a year I'd like to have you. It's only 3 minutes. I'd like to have your reply to this. Here it is right here,
okay.
According to Fox News.
Okay.
It's all over. Who takes credit for the strong economy? President Obama. I think today it began with him. He provided a good foundation for President Trump. President Trump is all with him. Harry, who's right? Under Barack Obama, $9 trillion of new debt was created. That is not a good foundation, if you ask me. He also used 0% interest rates for 8 years and the printing $5 trillion. For me, that's legacy. That's not very good, because eventually that debt and those deficits, and continues to this day, will come back to haunt markets and the economy, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately, success is racking up that debt.
Bet they are. No, you bet. And this administration raised spending $300 billion a year, so I'm not happy with Ryan McConnell or Trump at this point in time, as someone who cares about the fiscal well-being going forward.
You know, Jeff, do you, obviously, it's only so much you can say about how a politician or a president can move markets. We know they moved mightily under this one. We know they came back from record lows under the last one. So is it fair to say that each in his own way can take credit for a bull market that is already officially the longest on record?
I take issue with that, by the way. The 1949 to 1966 secular bull market.
Well,
okay. You know, when I grew up, Greenspan was like the Lord. And you remember Greenspan.
Oh,
he
yeah.
was like the Lord.
Yeah.
They looked to him. And he did. He seemed very good. He very knowledgeable about what he was doing and how he kept us out of recession. He knew how to use tariffs, and he knew how to use the economy and make it work for us. Now we have I don't think we have. Is it Mulvaney? I don't know who we have. Who is our economic? Trump has as his economic advisor. The name slips
well, Greenspan,
out of my mind.
Greenspan was at the Fed. He was in charge of the Fed.
Oh, he was in charge of the Fed. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
He had a lot to do. He had a lot to do with the market, and he had a lot to
well,
do with.
With monetary policy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With,
well, you know, I'm still not convinced, Mike, because I'm thinking this is a big bullhorn. This is a big thing for the Democrats, putting it into Trump's head psychologically. If we go into a recession, this will kill Trump. I don't believe it. Here's Ronna McDaniel. Ronna McDaniel is a GOP chairwoman, and she just tweeted. And she tweeted at Donald Trump, and she says this, Donald Trump puts America's first and is paying off. 85% of blue-collar workers say their lives are headed in the right direction. Manufacturing optimism at an all-time high. Economic confidence is at a record high. This is the chairman, GOP chairman. She also tweeted this, and see if you agree with her, Mike. 6 million plus new jobs, over half for women. 500,000 manufacturing jobs have been created. Record low unemployment among African American, Hispanic, and Asian Americans. And he's just getting started. That is, she just tweeted that a little while ago, and that's Ronna McDaniel from the GOP chairwoman. See, when we started thinking, okay, the Republicans are rebelling, they're revolution, Saraguchi, I don't have his name, Anthony, is ringing out these alarm bells, exactly, that Trump lost it, he's crazy, he's a wicked witch. Is this really hurting? I know he's, Anthony is getting
into
Trump's head, but
it is hurting.
What do you think
again,
about
I go back to, first of all, a lot of the information that McDaniel tweeted out his fault. It's just wrong. And it's not supported by facts. It just isn't. But Donald Trump has been hurt. He has and I go back again, he's been hurt with his approval rating and with Americans who support him. He has a 43% approval rating. He's never gone much above 43%. He goes lower, he goes a little bit higher, not gotten much beyond that. There's no president since the dawn of the Gallup poll, which was one of the first polls that monitored the president, that has had this poor of an approval rating. So all of this is hurting and has hurt Donald Trump. It's hurt him in the past. It's hurting him today. There's no way Donald Trump can be reelected president of the United States with 43% of the approval rating nationally, because when you look at states, individual states where the elections matter, where the polls eventually matter. National polls don't mean anything in the long run. But when you go to those states, states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, Trump has even worse problems. And his approval rating in those states is even oftentimes, I don't know what it is today because I didn't look today, but oftentimes is worse than the national 43%. And he can't win. A president can't be reelected when his approval rating is that poor. And it will get a little bit worse if the economy tanks. There's going to be a base approval rating for Donald Trump at about 30-some percent. It's not going to go lower than that. That's the part of the American public who don't care what Donald Trump says or does. They don't care. They're going to vote for him. Because they're going to vote, because they believe whatever comes out of his mouth. That's not enough of the American public to carry him through to a second term. It's just not.
You know, when they show these polls on Fox News and Fox News.
He's bad with Fox News right now. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah, he is.
He's even doing bad on Fox News. Yeah, go ahead.
He makes it like Fox News is not how it used to be and blah, blah, blah. But when they show he sees these polls this early, that Biden, Warren, the top five people that beat Trump by 10 to 12, the 6 points. Camilla beating them by 9 points. You think it really affects this guy's ego? When are the money people? Because there's cracks in the wall right now. There's certain people who are ready to jump in. And when they keep seeing this and seeing this, when are the money people going to say, you know what, we can't win? You think it'll be a point, Mike, where they say, we can't win, we got to bring in another person to primary Trump? Or you think they're going to just let it ride like they did with John McCain and say, okay, we're not going to primary our guy. We just won't go to the polls. What's your opinion on that, Mike?
That's a good question. And, like, we talked about these guys last week, I think. Like, the Koch brothers, I think, have really permanently bolted from Donald Trump. They're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite a lot of money. I don't know if it really affects the presidential campaign, but the Koch brothers are looking at candidates for the Senate, the House, and so forth that are not Trumpists, that are not associated with Donald Trump. So it'll affect that. But to answer your question, that's a good question. The only reason, to be honest with you, in my opinion, that there's fewer Republicans today with, you know, individual Republicans with money, because they've left the party. They used to be called the Country Club Republicans. They were the wealthy Republicans who were socially moderate or liberal and fiscally conservative. And then the Republican Party suddenly became fiscally irresponsible and socially as conservative as you can become. I mean, the Republican Party today wants to execute women who have abortions. That's about as conservative as you can get. So the money people that are still – the individuals with money that are still – supporting Donald Trump probably will support Donald Trump to the end. But when you look at organizations, if this continues and he has a 43% approval rating, you know.
Mike, I want to add something to that. When you go state by state, I was looking at his approval rating here in Louisiana. And mm-hmm. In a year, his approval rating has dropped 10%, from 58% to 47%.
That's huge.
Right.
And that's Louisiana, for goodness sake. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's bad fun.
That is.
And that's what I'm talking about. What Ellen said, that is exactly the point. It's in those states where he should be. Good Lord, in Louisiana, he should be at 70%. But people are tired. So thanks for pointing that out, Ellen, because that points out.
I mean, and you have to realize, Brian, and Louisiana has some of the highest unemployment rates right now across the nation.
Yeah.
Reporting that Donald Trump's getting nervous.
Well,
What
that clip just said, Donald Trump is getting nervous. Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. Well, on that same point as what Ellen was saying and what you were saying, Mike, here's a little soundbite of this.
That poll was coming from the New Orleans Advocate. It wasn't coming from some scam state news outlet. It was coming from the New Orleans Advocate.
Cool.
Yeah.
And on that note, you're just reporting, Ellen, and here you go, Mike, on the same note that you guys, here is Ari. And it's only 5-6 minutes, and I'd like your reply, Mike, after this, because you guys were saying he was getting nervous.
Is
nervous
this Ari Fletcher? Is that who this is?
No, Ari Milber. I like him. He's more of a he's a lawyer on MSNBC, but he's really good.
Oh, okay.
But here's his report. This was actually yesterday or the day before. Here we go.
After a week of warnings of economic turmoil, reporting that Donald Trump's getting nervous. After a week of warnings of economic turmoil, apparently worried that without a strong economy, he might have nothing else to run on in 2020. Privately, Donald Trump sounding anxious and apprehensive about the economy, now calling executives to sound them out about what comes next. One Republican close to the administration telling the Washington Post, bottom line, he's rattled. Now compare this reporting to Donald Trump's very public stance which is kind of a reminder that for all the critics who cast Trump as a kind of emotional, undisciplined, hot mess, if you believe this Washington Post account, on this, he's actually quite disciplined, at least when it comes to lying in public about the things he contradicts in private.
See, the bottom line is, I know you like me, and this room is a love fest, I know that, but you have no choice but to vote for me, because your 401Ks, down the tubes, everything's going to be down the tubes. So, whether you love me or hate me, you got to vote for me.
Trump also saying it will be tough to win his trade war that he started with China. Back check, last year he himself promised it would be easy.
By the way, I never said China was going to be easy, but it's not tough, and they want to make a deal.
When a country, USA, is losing many billions of dollars on trade with virtually every country it does business with, trade wars are good and easy to win. As for what comes next, the reporting says that Trump has no new steps planned to counter a possible recession. Now, let's take that in. This could affect everyone, the economy. There could be legitimate reasons to not have those plans. There are presidents who have policies that believe the government does more harm than good if it tries to get into short-term market management. You hear this thing about, well, maybe some corrections are necessary. But tonight, let's be clear, the reports are not that Trump is using any of those policy or factually based reasons, but rather, he doesn't believe the fact. He's taking the conspiratorial view that the actual economic data itself cannot be trusted. And maybe there's a larger conspiracy among economists to support him. This reporting showing the depths of the president's conspiracy theory worldview. First, real simple, the data is the data. Second, if you take the view that maybe people do, within reason, skew some things towards their goals, let's remember, these leading economists, they lean right and towards the GOP, not left or socialist or against it. Now, while Trump may have some of the details wrong, it is true that a bad economy hurts the incumbent president almost every time. Since the Civil War, check this out, only one president has won re-election when a recession hit in the final 2 years of their term, and that's not a recent president. It was over a century ago, a time when, think about it, the bad news that we're talking about tonight that's getting out, the bad news that might hurt Trump if the market slumps continue, back then it didn't spread as fast. There wasn't a daily national media updating everyone on a kind of a vision of the national economy. So, where does all of this leave America heading into this weekend? We've had weeks of race baiting and division from this president, very real jitters over the markets and his trade war, questions about what Trump will do if his economic and political position gets more desperate. Those rough realities, they may sink in for many. And this is a president with a level of approval that can't afford to lose hardly anyone. So it is worth, as you know the facts, because you're watching the news and we deal in the facts here, it is also worth hearing how these realities are dealt with inside the MAGA universe. Because at the president's new rally, we didn't see bad news rebutted so much as denied and distracted away, replaced with a kind of meandering stadium set list that could leave even hardcore fans somewhat confused.
Is there anything better than a Trump rally? And remember when they used to say that the Hillary Clinton campaign is highly sophisticated. Highly sophisticated. She did a lot of bad things, folks. I will tell you this. We now have a great Attorney General. And by the way, the wall is being built. That guy's got a serious weight problem. Go home, start exercising. Got a bigger problem than I do. There's never been a movement like this, never. Our movement is built on love, and it is.
I'm doing what New York Times called it.
There you go.
The movement is built on love. And by the way, the Dow Jones at this point right here is up 5.89, almost up 6 points currently right now, as of now. It was down around 10 a.m. California time, and now it's back up, so it's doing okay, by the way. And that's Mike.
So, Brian, I keep hearing that, you know, they don't like it if it's going down.
Well, you know, I think it's risky to put all your and this is what the Democrats do. They put all their eggs in one basket, and so many times their eggs got smashed. You know, this was going to end Trump. This was going to end Trump. This scandal.
But it has.
It has affected Trump.
I didn't mean to cut you off. It has affected Trump. He has a 43% approval rating nationally. It has affected him.
Well,
it has.
Do you think, Mike, do you think it's enough? Here's what I'm trying to say. Do you think it's enough? I personally think that it's going to be a massacre in 2020. I think a lot of people are still banking on what happened last year about the numbers were not accurate. Don't believe the numbers. And they were right.
You mean 2016? I'm talking when he ran against Hillary. You said the last election. I thought you were talking about 2018. When he ran against Hillary,
her numbers were extremely high. His was low. Trump came on and said, don't believe the numbers, don't believe the numbers, because basically what they found out that people lied because Trump is such an albatross.
I said that. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So how can we trust, Mike? Because
the people that were lying about voting for Trump were Democrats that were mad at Hillary, and they didn't foresee that Donald Trump would be as bad as he's turned out to be. And I call that the Carter effect is what I call it. I actually wrote a column about it in October of 2016, and I said Donald Trump would win 305 electoral votes. I was off by one. And I like bragging about that because everyone else is getting it wrong, and I got it right. Yeah, I'll send you the link to it. But what I call the Carter effect, when Ronald Reagan ran for president in 1980, the polls, including on election day, exit polls, had it neck and neck, and they said, you know, we're not going to know who wins until the middle of the night. 7:30, Ronald Reagan has won the election, a half an hour after the polls closed on the East Coast, and he won by one of the largest landslides in American history, both in electoral votes and in popular vote. It wasn't even close. He beat Carter by over 10% of the popular vote, which in this day and age is a landslide. And he won, you know, I don't know, that election, like 400 electoral votes. I don't remember it exactly off the top of my head. When he ran for re-election, he won every state except for one. But it was a landslide. And Carter voters were going in because they were upset with President Carter. They liked him, but they didn't support him, his policies. The country wasn't doing well, et cetera. And so they would tell voters, they'd go in and vote for Reagan, they'd tell pollsters that they voted for Carter. That happened, I think, in 2016 with people going in and you know, mad at Hillary Clinton, the Democrats who didn't like her, who were upset about Bernie or whatever. And they voted for Trump and then lied about it. But there are not going to be Democrats this go-around that are going to – or independents that are going to go in and vote for Trump and lie about it. They're not going to go in and vote for Trump. Because they're not mad. They're not going to be mad. There'll be some people. There's always going to be some people that are mad at the party's nominee. But it won't be as pervasive as a lot of Democrats were with the nomination of Hillary Clinton. I mean, even, you know, say Joe Biden's the nominee. You know, there'll be some Bernie Sanders supporters who aren't going to vote or whatever. But it's just not going to be a situation where Democrats are going to go in and vote for Donald Trump this go-around. It's just not going to happen because they've seen what he's done as president. And that conduct as president and as a person will far outweigh any disaffection that they might have with the Democratic nominee. It's just – it's not going to happen this go-around. And you take that out of the mix, and I think you take away, you know, between 5 and 10% of what Donald Trump got in the way of voters last time. So Donald Trump lost the popular vote last time. Barely won by 70,000 votes divided over three states, and you take away 5 to 10% of people that voted for him last time because they were mad at Hillary, they wanted to spank the Democratic Party, whatever. You take those people out of the mix, and Donald Trump is, you know, he can't win those states. And by not being able to win those states, he cannot be elected president again. The math isn't there.
Well, you may be right, because there were people forget the factors of how Donald Trump actually got elected. And I'm just going to say one. I'm not going to go through everything else.
Right.
Comey. Comey turned whatever you want to go through that Hillary, you know, did not go to Wisconsin, blah, blah, blah. But if you got to remember, Hillary was winning by almost a landslide until Comey came out.
Right.
That gave Trump new life and put some credibility of that she is kind of shady. We don't have the Comeys. We don't have the Hillary Clintons.
No.
And the Democrats are very likable.
They are.
I'm a little worried about Biden, but they're likable. And believe it or not, you want to think that people are very knowledgeable about elections and they want the economy. That's bullshit. The average American, this is a popularity contest I'm looking at here. And see how likable they are and how they don't like the other opponent. What do you say about that, Mike? Did we come down to that?
No, I do think, you know what, the American people, no matter where you're – there are people on the extremes of both parties, extreme Republicans, extreme Democrats, extreme conservatives, extreme liberals, who will never like a president who's not on board with their policies 100%. But the majority of the American people – are somewhere in the middle when it comes to politics, and they want to like their president. I think they really do. I go back to George Bush. A lot of Americans disagreed with his policies. A lot of Americans didn't even think he was elected president in the first place. But when 9/11 happened, they got behind the president. They 91% approval rating, they liked their president. He squandered that all away. I totally get that. But people want to like their president. And I think I held out hopes when Donald Trump got elected. I thought, you know what, this guy is a boob. He's stupid. But he has a chance to be a likable president. He had that opportunity. He totally blew it. He's totally blown it. He can never recover from the crap he's done. But, you know, people – Obama was a likable president. I mean, some people thought he was standoffish or whatever, but he was a likable president. And in the end, George W. Bush, I think, particularly since he's not a president anymore, people kind of like him. People like Ronald Reagan. When they agreed with him politically, they liked him. Same thing with, so you're right. I do agree with you that batches of Democrats running for president overall are likable people, and I do think that matters. I didn't agree with a lot of Clinton stuff. I worked for one of his opponents in 96. I worked for Bob Dole. But I respected Clinton as president, and I kind of liked him. I thought the shenanigans that he was doing in the Oval Office with an intern, I wasn't pleased with that going on. I didn't think he should be impeached for stuff stemming from that. But I liked him. He's a likable guy. George W. Bush... You know, I disagree. I switched parties because of George W. Bush's policies. But I would go out to have a beer with him in a heartbeat. I liked him. I liked Obama. But you get to Donald Trump. Pardon me using an overused phrase. But if Donald Trump were on fire, I wouldn't piss on him. So I don't like him, and I think a lot of Americans don't like him. And now the Secret Service is probably going to come to my house because I said I want to piss on the President of the United States, or I wouldn't piss on the President of the United States if you were on fire. I'll let you know if they come to my door.
Oh, no. They won't. If you ever look at his threads, believe me, that's the nicest thing anybody said about him.
That's
the
nicest
worse.
Thing. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
And Mike, when people hear these reports about him buying Greenland and he doesn't understand that Denmark is a country, and he actually believes that he could buy Greenland, and then when you hear another report like this, he just tweeted this 23 hours ago, and this is Donald Trump. He says, "Wow, report just out. Google manipulated from 2.6 million." to 16 million votes for Hillary Clinton in 2016 election. This was put out by a Clinton supporter, not a Trump supporter, Google should be sued. My victory was even bigger than thought. Somebody should tell him he won. What is going on here, Mike? You know, when I hear him keep talking about Clinton and I hear him keep talking, somebody should shake him and say, sir, you are the president. Does this kind of thing bothers his supporters, or are they just, you know, just more fodder for gossip crap for them to talk about? But, you know, or does it really, somebody says, you know what, I'm really getting tired of his tweets. I'm talking about Republicans. This is embarrassing. Yeah. Knock it off. Does this hurt him when he says that Google manipulated? And by the way, Google rebuked that information.
Oh, yeah.
And when Donald Trump says somebody should sue them, well, Donald, why don't you sue them? You're just putting it out there in the universe to let somebody else take a hit because you know it's not true. But Google rebukes this, and that's it. Google said that's not true, and how Trump got that information that was manipulated, and it was from Google, is that he was watching Fox and Friends, and he had a psychologist on there. That was he was on there for 25 seconds. Talking about algorithms and how Google may have done it. And so Trump's own mind saying, wow, they really manipulated. And so that's how he got that statement, because he heard it from Fox and Friends. But does that hurt him, Mike, at all? Or people just said, that's just Donald. You know, we got to a point, that's just Donald.
It doesn't hurt him with the core of his supporters, because they believe whatever he says. And at this point, that's the only people he's pandering to. The rest of us, to me, it's just like, well, like he was in New Hampshire at his rally a few days ago, whenever it was, and he said, I won the election in New Hampshire. Well, he lost. He lost New Hampshire.
Right.
And he said, I won because of massive voter fraud. There were thousands of people being bussed into the state, blah, blah, blah. And so the head of the Federal Election Commission wrote him a letter and said, you said this in 2017 and haven't provided us the evidence yet that massive voter fraud occurred in New Hampshire. Please provide it to me. And then she ended her letter with something like, as a former casino owner, you should understand that the time has come for you to lay down your hand or fold. And so, you know,
exactly.
I think the majority of Americans, the majority of Americans are tired of his lies. He lies all the time. He lies when he doesn't need to lie. And that's probably indicative of someone that has a mental health issue of some sort. I don't know what kind of mental health problem he has. You know, those Trump supporters, what I kind of watch what they do on social media. When he says something that's really outlandish, they just go silent. They stop. But if he says something that's either a new lie that he hasn't tried before, or a lie that's tied into some sort of conspiracy theory, they really like conspiracy theories. They'll take it and run with it. And so his core is going to believe it no matter what, but the majority of Americans are just, you know, shaking their heads. They know he's lying. They know he doesn't tell the truth. And some of that lies like that publicly, you know, in fairness, I think it's fair to conclude that he has a little bit off the rocker.
They're saying that right now, and because of lack of time, I only have two more questions of you. People don't know the name. People don't know the name, but you will know the name. She won't get any credit whatsoever. This is a woman. Her name is Dr. Rachel Bykofer. Now, why she's so important is that she predicted, she's a professor, she predicted the election last year. She was spot on. She did research and her stuff, and same as you, Mike, same as what you did too.
Yeah.
Now, she came out yesterday and predicted this. It's only 2 minutes, Mike. This is what she predicted. This is Dr. Rachel Bykofer predicting the election for 2020.
Of course, the big one everyone's talking about is Donald Trump's win over Hillary Clinton in the presidential election.
That was last year. I'm sorry, I was queuing it up. I thought that was where she was. Basically, she was on Lawrence yesterday. That was last year when she predicted it. She predicted the magic number, I think, was 247. 247, you win. She's predicting, and 2020 that Donald Trump will lose the election. He would get 161, the Democrat, whoever is running. And she says it doesn't matter what Democrat is running, they will get 247 and they will win the election. Donald Trump will lose in 2020. That's what she predicted.
I think she's – and if she's down in – if she's down in like 160 electoral votes for Donald Trump, I think she's spot on.
Because
I think he loses a lot.
It's going to be embarrassing in my opinion, Mike. It's like what you said before. I think it's going to be a reverse. I think it's going to be a reverse of 2006 where we did the hidden people who would not admit that they voted and they came out to vote. I think it's going to be reverse. I think people are going to stay home. I don't think they'll go to the Democrat side, but I think they're going to root for them. And they're going to do the McCain thing. I think it's going to be humiliating.
I think you're right. I don't think it's, and again, you look at the Democratic candidates, you know, Biden, Harris. I don't think Bernie Sanders, and I'm not being disrespectful to him. I don't think he has a chance of being the nominee. And again, I'm not being disrespectful. I'm not trying to ride him off. But I think it's going to be someone that's kind of coming out of more of the center right of the party, the center left of the Democratic Party, rather than the really left wing of the party. And you look at, you look at Biden, you look at Harris, even Buttigieg, who went up, I think he went up one percentage point. Why some of the other ones have gone down, he actually went up one. But if you end up with a ticket that's like Biden, Buttigieg, Biden, Harris, Harris, Biden, I mean, maybe even Joe Biden becomes vice president again. I don't know. But you get a combination like these people, they're going to, they have some little skeletons in their closet. They're not like Trump-sized skeletons. And like you said earlier, they're likable folks. And I think they're going to wipe the map, literally wipe the electoral map with Donald Trump. And I think the lady that you just read, the doctor you just referenced, 168, I think it was 168 electoral votes for Trump. That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think she said 161 for the for Trump. I think it was 200, I don't have it in front of me, 270.
Well, you get over 247 and you win.
And so that's what she
predicted.
And that
would be like, and I think that makes sense. That would be like Alabama, Mississippi, those states in the South cutting out Florida. And then it would be like Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, those states in the way up north and those states way down south. Those go to Trump. He gets 161 electoral votes and he's done. So I think she makes perfect sense. I haven't read her stuff. I'll go back and read it today. But I think this year, rather than me sitting down and going state by state, I'll just write a one-sentence thing that says, see what this doctor said.
Right.
Because it sounds absolutely right. It sounds spot on.
Yeah, she's spot on. I think so, too. I think it's even going to be worse than that. I really think it's going to get into the 300s. I think he will be humiliated.
It'll be really embarrassing.
Because when you got – I still say Florida's in play. I still say Texas is in play
Florida.
Now, which was not in play
Texas
before.
Wisconsin's
exactly.
He's not going to win Wisconsin. Texas is in play, and Donald Trump, and I think we talked about this 2 weeks earlier last week, Texans are proud. Whether they're Democrats or Republicans, that is a state that really, Texas pride really does mean something. And the President of the United States came down to El Paso and behaved horribly. And that was an insult, not just to people in El Paso, it was an insult to Texans. And that's gonna impact. Because in Texas, there's a lot of Republicans that support Donald Trump, but they're Texans first. They're a different breed in Texas when it comes to voters down there. So they're different.
That's true.
They're just a different breed. Because Texans elected, they elected Ann Richards governor, a liberal Democrat.
I love
governor.
I loved her.
I do too. And she was a Texan. She epitomized the Texans and her politics through and through. She is, and so was George W. Bush. I mean, he beat her, fair and square, but they both epitomized Texans. But she shows that in Texas, if you're more Texan than Democrat, you're going to win. So,
well, here's
slap
here,
a cowboy,
well, my,
slap a cowboy hat on Kamala Harris. Send her down to Texas. She's going to do okay.
Well, I hate to rush you. Arkansas
okay.
Mike is in here.
You have
how's this segment,
now,
Mike?
You?
This segment is going
hey.
So fast. But I just, hey, Arkansas Mike, I just want to read this one thing. We're talking about Rachel, and people
I
don't
didn't
remember
even know
Rachel
Bycoffer.
Yeah, and my apologies.
And,
I've had a lot of family stuff this morning, and I just called in.
Oh,
but
no.
Yeah, I caught that little segment last night on that Dr. Rachel. And I'm like, Lauren
yeah.
Fernando, how do you pronounce that last name? Okay.
I got it right
I
here.
I Bycoffer?
Bycoffer, yeah, that's it. But it was at 278 to 157, I think, is what she predicted. And looking at that
yeah.
map, man, yeah, I agree. Because that really does. But you know what? And, Mike, how many more states this fall and even to this spring, remember, might do the winner-take-all popular vote.
Well, I know.
There may be some
momentum. Yeah.
Yeah, there's
well,
a couple of those that might even
yeah.
make it more obvious of, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah.
I'm in one
well,
of those states.
Predicts.
Our governor just signed that last week.
Right.
This week.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
she
yeah.
predicts, she says here, and I'll go with Arkansas Mike, which you said, Rachel, what did you call her? Bycoffer? It's hard to pronounce that name.
Bycoffer.
Okay. She says she doesn't rely on polls. She predicts Trump will lose three states that were key to his victory. He's going to lose Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. That's what she predicts. I dare to put in Florida,
oh, yeah.
maybe. Because
no,
of the immigration thing going on. But, you know, Ohio's still far as
yeah,
I'm concerned, it's up in the
yeah,
air.
I don't even know if we need Ohio.
Yes, Ellen.
You might have to throw in Mississippi because of everything that just happened with ICE.
Oh, you
yeah.
might. Oh,
that was horrible.
No. No.
Really?
You know, I know Mississippi too well. I've got the one guy that ran for senator last year. That's what I'm that I chalked up to. Nope, that's just Mississippi politics. I mean, we did everything we could. And I was 13 for 16. Guess where one of those three I didn't win was? Oh, yeah. Abby Mississippi.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
After 2020, the Republican Party really does become the party of the Deep South and the Upper North.
Yeah.
Well, we hope that's it. And we got to go, everybody. Mike, before we go, and sorry, Arkansas Mike, because we have a doubleheader today. But, Mike, before we
sure.
go, tell me how you played. Please give us a little background on your play and everything. Give
next?
Us that plug.
Don't you have sex talk next? Isn't that what comes up next?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. No. We are leaving
it's,
you
it's
for
just
sex.
Politics.
You're
politics
the you're the
sex.
Foreplay,
that
Mike.
Means,
Mike, you're
right.
the foreplay.
Yeah. Aye, aye, aye.
But let us know. But tell us what's going on with you, Mike, and your play, and plug your play and everything.
Let's see. I'll plug the Hedy Lamarr play, which is one I plug a lot. It just came back from Ireland. It ran in Ireland, in Belfast, Ireland. And it's now back in the United States. And starting in 2020, it's going to be on a national tour, actually beginning in December of this year in St. Paul, Minneapolis, the Twin Cities. And then I'm not sure where it goes after that, but it'll be touring for a year. And there's going to be two actresses at least playing Hedy Lamarr in this particular touring company. And again, Hedy Lamarr is the woman who in the 20s, 30s, and 40s was an actress in Hollywood known as the most beautiful girl in the world. That's what they called her. That's not me making some sort of sexist statement. But Hedy Lamarr is in her spare time when she wasn't making movies, was inventing stuff, and she invented the technology, conceived of the technology that makes everything from Wi-Fi to GPS to Bluetooth to your smartphone possible. You had one of the actresses playing Hedy Lamarr on the show. And,
yes, I did.
She's still misbehaved. Yes. Yeah.
Have her come back on. Tell her I calmed down. I got my meds. And I would like to talk to her again.
Well, I'll pass it on.
I made
it on
sure
to
this,
her.
was filled.
Yeah, so I'll let her know that your prescriptions are fulfilled. Or filled, and I'll let her know, and I'll see what she says.
Okay. Michael, thank you so much. Mike Bromo,
yeah.
Everybody, thank you so much.
Have
and
a good
as
day.
You can tell, Mike, very knowledgeable. And thank you, Arkansas Mike. And we had a
yep.
good segment here. Stay tuned for our next segment about sex. If you're lonely, if you're divorced, and like I put it up, if you're winky missing the pinky, Allison O'Donnell. We'll take care of that for you. All right, everybody, have a great day, and I'll see you in 5 seconds. Thank you, Arkansas Mike, and you know our prayers are with you. I don't have to say that anymore.
Thank you.
You already know we're with you, my friend. All right, we'll be right back in 30 seconds. Thank you, everybody. Bye.